From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The U.S.-backed government of Honduras has faced accusations of mass repression. The Central American nation, whose citizens are fleeing northward to the U.S., escaping that repression, has been in political turmoil for more than 10 years since the U.S.-backed overthrow of Manuel Zelaya's presidency. The current president, Juan Orlando Hernandez, has overseen a government that has pushed through a privatization agenda and been accused of widespread corruption. In fact, the president's own brother faces a trial in Miami, Florida on drug-related charges. President Hernandez himself now faces charges of using drug money to fund his campaign. We go to Honduras to speak with Karen Spring. She is coordinator of the Honduras Solidarity Network based in Tegucigalpa. Welcome to the program, Karen.
Thank you very much for having me.
So first, let's talk about what it is that the president himself is facing right now. I mentioned these charges around drug money being used to finance his campaign. His term doesn't end till 2022, his current term, but some are suggesting that what he's facing right now may cut that short.
Yes, there's some very serious allegations against him that are coming from many different places. You mentioned the case in the United States. That's actually coming from the New York Southern District Court. Juan Orlando Hernandez, who is the current president of Honduras, is named as a co-conspirator in the charges that the New York Southern District Court have brought against his brother, Tony Hernandez. So Juan Orlando Hernandez himself is being accused of co-conspiring or to take drugs and arms into the United States. But also there's some serious allegations of corruption. In fact, cases that have been brought forward by an anti-corruption body called the MASI here in Honduras that not only mention one or two cases of corruption, they don't directly mention Juan Orlando Hernandez, but it is sort of known that the National Party, which is the party that has been in power in Honduras since 2009, has basically used public institutions like the Ministry of Agriculture, like the Ministry of Health, like the Social Security Institute, to basically steal public funds to fund Juan Orlando Hernandez's campaign that basically saw his election in the last two national electoral processes. So these are very serious allegations, and people and Hondurans have been protesting and sort of in the streets trying to raise these issues, trying to say that this government really doesn't have any legitimacy because of these allegations of corruption and involvement in drug trafficking.
So I understand that these charges emerged as a result of U.S. prosecutors going through the case that Juan Orlando's brother is implicated in. Prosecutors in New York, federal prosecutors in early August described Antonio Hernandez or Tony Hernandez, who was a former lawmaker in Honduras, as a violent multi-ton drug trafficker. And about $1.5 million of those drug proceeds apparently were used to support Juan Orlando Hernandez's presidential election in 2013. But there was an election more recently than that, right? And that too was shrouded in accusations of corruption.
Right. And that was the November 2017 electoral general elections that basically saw widespread fraud. And this isn't fraud that was alleged by Hondurans. I mean, obviously, Hondurans were in the streets protesting the fraud when the computer system crashed many times. And all of a sudden, Juan Orlando Hernandez was winning. When before the computer system crashed, he was actually losing, not to mention the fact that he actually illegally ran for re-election. The Honduran Constitution specifically forbids a second term. But also the Organization of American States actually said very clearly that it was impossible to verify the electoral results as a result of the widespread fraud and the disruptions in the computer system. And so these are really serious allegations. And a lot of people, you mentioned in your introduction that there are a lot of people, a lot of Hondurans that are fleeing to the U.S. border. A lot of Hondurans saw those 2017 elections as a way that they could go to the polls and vote and sort of change some of the, change their reality, change the difficulties that are causing so many people to flee the country. And when they tried to go and cast their vote, they saw widespread fraud. And then they saw the United States government, along with other foreign governments, support Juan Orlando Hernández. And so now all of these corruption scandals are coming out. Now all of the involvement that Juan Orlando Hernández and his family members have in drug trafficking are all coming out as well, which is creating more and more of sort of doubt of how long is this president going to be able to stay in power and how much longer is the United States government going to support this government.
Right, because Trump's government has only embraced, or been, I should say, the latest president to embrace the Honduran government of Hernández, and has actually lauded his government for fighting drug-related crimes and reducing narco trafficking. Meanwhile, when you have the president himself deeply implicated in narco trafficking and drug money, there seems to be silence from the government, not from federal prosecutors who are bringing this up, but from the U.S., from the Trump administration. And as far as I can tell, there hasn't really been any comment on this latest bombshell regarding Hernández himself, right?
Right. And actually, that's a really good point to make, Sonali. And I think it's really important that people in the United States know that millions of dollars, of taxpayers' dollars from the U.S. have come into Honduras the last 10 years for the exact purpose, like you mentioned, of fighting drug trafficking, of fighting organized crime, of arming Honduran military, arming Honduran police, training them to battle drug trafficking and organized crime. And so now when you look at these documents that are coming out of the U.S. Southern District Court, they're saying that, you know, Tony Hernández, the brother of the current president, was very much involved with drug trafficking and believed that he could operate in total impunity to the point where he was even stamping the cocaine that he was transporting into the United States with his initials, TH.
Wow.
And the documents talk about how he believed and how he was protected by his brother. And so Americans really need to reflect on what was that, what were millions of dollars of U.S. funds going into supporting? And how is it possible that the Juan Orlando Hernández, who is basically the chief and that runs the military, that manages the military and the police through his position as the president of the country, how is it possible that he still is enjoying support from the Trump administration and the U.S. government that have stayed quiet and haven't said anything about these recent allegations that will, then more things will come to light as next month on October 2nd, when Tony Hernandez's trial begins. And it's suspected that more and more information, damning information against this administration here in Honduras will come to light.
Let's talk about the government's response to grassroots uprisings against this corruption. There have been mass protests on the streets of various cities, especially Tegucigalpa, where you are, and there's been widespread government repression of those protesters. I understand your own husband, Edwin Espinal, was a political prisoner for 18 months and one of dozens of political prisoners that the government has essentially kept imprisoned or incarcerated for their political work. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. I mean, basically, since the November 2017 electoral crisis, it's been very difficult for Hondurans to protest. And there's been protests all over the country. The growing illegitimacy that stems from the electoral fraud, that stems from all these allegations of being involved in drug trafficking and widespread corruption, and then the caravans, people fleeing because they just can't live in this, live in Honduras anymore. It's become very difficult to live here for a variety of reasons, economic, but also security. So Hondurans So Hondurans are protesting, and they're protesting so many different issues, privatization of education, of healthcare. And what is happening is the government is sending state security forces to the streets. Basically, since the 2017 electoral crisis, it's become a common practice for these state security forces that are funded, trained by the United States to open fire on protesters and also criminalize protesters. So they're using the justice system to basically criminalize any sort of opposition to the government, any sort of efforts to speak out about what is going on here in the country. And so my partner, Edwin Espinal, was held in a maximum security prison that is run by the military, the Honduran military, for 18 months. And he was in horrific conditions. He had 2 hours of sunlight every month. There was no communication. There was no letters allowed. There was no pens, paper, books. And so he's recently been released, but there's still 10 political prisoners that have not been released. Now the government is sending more and more people to prison. Most recently, there was 8 land defenders that were sent to a maximum security prison. They are now with a teacher that is 23 years old that was sent to prison as well for protesting the privatization of education. And this is all happening in the context of, like I mentioned, state security forces opening firing on protesters almost on a weekly basis. And so the abilities for Hondurans that want to stay here in Honduras to protest, to sort of change their daily reality and not have to migrate and not have to flee and not have to go to the border, Mexico-US border, to ask for asylum and flee the difficulties of living here, the government of Honduras is making it even more difficult on a daily basis for Hondurans to stay here and protest and try and change the reality and try and change the conditions that are causing so many Hondurans to flee in the first place.
And so the migrant crisis here in the United States is so divorced from that reality that we're just talking about, that when you have especially right-wing conservative and Trump-supporting commentators describing the surge of refugees fleeing that repression, they never, never, never bring up how the U.S. has backed this repressive government and is in part responsible for keeping those conditions in place that these people are fleeing. And that's such a critical part of the conversation, right?
Absolutely, Sonali. And it's actually very disappointing when we listen to the corporate media in the US and how they're not raising these questions. They're not asking these questions like, why are people fleeing Honduras? And what is the role of U.S. foreign policy in creating the conditions that cause people to leave? And I think it's absolutely critical to understand that, because this current government is involved in drug trafficking. It's involved in widespread corruption. It enjoys the support of the Trump administration and of the U.S. government, and has for many, many years. And so while the United States maintains its current policies related to Honduras, while they keep funding, sending millions of dollars to the country to prop up state security forces that open fire on Hondurans that stay here, that try and change what's going on here, I think that while the U.S. maintains its policy in Honduras, unfortunately, caravans and refugees are going to continue to go to the U.S. border, and it's going to continue to be a mass problem for the Trump administration. And I just don't see any way that it can be resolved until the United States really looks inward and starts reflecting on its decades-long policies and foreign policy here in Honduras.
How vulnerable is Juan Orlando Hernandez's presidency in Honduras? I mean, he's enjoying support from the United States. I guess we'll see what happens when the case of his brother goes to trial in the U.S. and if that'll pressure or result in any congressional pressure again aimed at the Trump administration, but inside Honduras, even though, of course, he commands the power of the state and the military to foment this repression, is he more vulnerable today than he was in 2017 and 2018?
Oh, he absolutely is more vulnerable. And excuse me, you know, as this case goes to trial in October, you know, very, very soon, actually, in a few weeks, you know, more information is going to come out. But the Honduran organizations, human rights organizations, are also very concerned that, you know, as you back a scared animal into a corner, you know, that animal starts to attack and attack more. And so it's very concerning for people living here in Honduras that will mean that the repression will grow, that the government will become much more, even more reckless in the way that it's managing itself, the way that it is treating the population. And so, you know, in October next month, as the case goes to trial and more information will come out, I guess we'll see what the United States government will do. Hondurans are very clear that the only reason that Juan Orlando Hernández is in power today is because of the support that the United States government is giving Juan Orlando Hernández, the current president, and that without U.S. support, there's just no way that Juan Orlando Hernández can maintain in power. His growing legitimacy is just so, it's so clear here in Honduras. He has such little support that it's ultimately about what will the United States government do next month in October and what will happen as his brother's case goes to trial next month.
What about other lawmakers in Honduras and the judiciary system? Are the checks and balances within the Honduran government working to hold the president accountable?
Well, actually, that's something that is constantly discussed here in Honduras. The problem is that people call Juan Orlando Hernández a dictator. And there's a reason why they call him a dictator. He has created a body called the National Council for Security and Defense, which basically violates the independence of the three branches of the state. And so he meets with this national council that meets very frequently, that's making most of the decisions, the major important decisions in the country. And it violates the independence of the judiciary and of the investigative bodies of the state. And so it's one of the reasons, too, that there's been no investigations, no, you know, processes that have been brought forward by the public prosecutor's office against Juan Orlando Hernández's brother, and that it took the U.S. authorities arresting Tony Hernández as he was passing through a U.S. airport. And so there really is no checks and balances here because Juan Orlando Hernández has taken over the three branches of the government and basically placed very key individuals in the judiciary, in the prosecutor's office, that basically stall and prevent any sort of movement on cases against anyone that's sort of part of his family, but part of his group of people that he's strategically placed in very key positions in the government to stop any sort of checks and balances that would mean investigations or any sort of legal cases against mm-hmm. him. And so as these cases move forward in the New York courts, I think that the problem is much deeper than just a few cases of drug trafficking, a few individuals inside the Honduran system, the Honduran government. In fact, it's a whole structure that is currently being controlled by Juan Orlando Hernández, and that in order to really get to the bottom of corruption and drug trafficking in the government, a much more systematic investigation, a much more systematic view and look at what's going on in Honduras needs to happen. Otherwise, I don't really see any like major impact happening in terms of battling corruption, battling the high levels of impunity that have basically once again caused so many Hondurans to flee the country and feel like they absolutely have no protection protection from Honduran institutions like the police, like the military, like the prosecution or the attorney general's office, like the courts, because it's been completely controlled by Juan Orlando Hernández.
So one of the other things that has brought Honduras into the news is a a national emergency on dengue fever that has claimed hundreds of lives, most of them children's lives. Honduras's government under Juan Orlando Hernandez, I understand, has worked very hard to privatize the healthcare system in the country, which I can't imagine is helping very much to address this epidemic that's broken out.
Right. And that's actually a good point, because part of the privatization of healthcare that thousands of Hondurans took to the street in April of this year of 2019 to protest, one of the consequences is that the government, as part of the privatization process, is cutting funding to the healthcare system. And one of the programs that they cut as a result of those cutbacks and privatization process was prevention programs that saw fumigation in various neighborhoods and cities all around the country that basically attacked the vector that transmits dengue, which are mosquitoes. And so there's been a huge rise in mosquitoes, and that's sort of what many of the healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, you know, that actually went to the streets to protest around the time that the epidemic broke in Honduras were saying was that you've cut these programs, which has led to, you know, this epidemic, which targets the most vulnerable sectors of the population, like children, as you mentioned. And so while there's massive cutbacks in Honduras of these important programs, you know, dengue will be a major issue, and all the other sort of communicable diseases that are very common in Honduras, like malaria, dengue, like you mentioned, and others.
Karen, where can people find out more about the work you do through Honduras Solidarity Network?
Sure. So people that are interested in learning more can go to our Facebook page, Honduras Solidarity Network. We have a very, we frequently update, daily updates are posted on Facebook and also on our Twitter, which is at Honduras SOL. Those are our main sources of information that anyone looking for daily updates, like I mentioned, or the role of the United States and Canada in Honduras, we post frequently as well. Everything there, everything that's written in the U.S. press as well, we post there.
Well, I want to thank you, Karen, so much for joining us today. Good luck to you and your husband, Edwin Espinal, with his upcoming appeal. I understand that's coming up very soon. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Sonali, for the invitation.
Karen Spring is coordinator of the Honduras Solidarity Network. She's based in Tegucigalpa, where she's been joining us from. We've been discussing the current political situation in Honduras. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.